I'm here for release.
Okay.
Of this world and earth.
You're done?
I'm done.
Today you're done. Well, you were kind of working up to it.
This week has, you know, really kicked my ass.
Nice. Good for you.
Yeah.
Bring out your dad. Bring out your dad.
Yeah. No, more than that. Nasty.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. I mean, I'm in a battle with the universe right now.
Things are violating your dignity.
You're in the music biz, right? But you're on the admin side, sort of.
Yeah. I think it's just, I don't know if anybody else feels it. I think it's just change.
Yeah.
You know, when you get just a lot of change coming at you at once, it's,
I was just saying about the same thing.
Really? You just feel a resistance to it, or your first reaction is like, whoa! So,
sure.
I think that's undermining everything. The universe as it keeps presenting itself.
Yeah, good luck.
But when you think you're a little self, you're screwed no matter what, and you're pretty vulnerable, and you get raveled easy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help to, as a little self, say, holy shit, I got to get out of this little self because it's killing me. Like, that doesn't help at all.
Well, I think you get so wrapped up in it that you don't ever get away from it. So pretty soon, you are the little self all over you. Right?
It's the little self trying to get out of the little self by saying it's not a little self. It's a wheel inside a wheel, and you are screwed.
You're not even thinking along those terms. You're just like being the little self. You know,
you drag your ass here and you hope Jeff can shine some light on something that's not that.
Oh, Jesus, you're looking at me. Your suffering is your problem. God. I will take away your suffering for a fee. You are an idiot. Boom.
Snacks and you fail.
Yeah, really, yeah. How much do you want? What do you got? How bad is it? The worse it is, the more wealthy I become. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I was like, okay, you know, just let go of all this stuff. Like, you know, the mind just takes over and you're on this hamster wheel and it's just like, you know, regurgitating everything that happens during the day. And it's like, let go. You're like, okay, I'm imagining that I'm letting go. So you're just using your imagination to let go, but it's really hard to, like, pop out of the whole thing when you're immersed.
I find music to be less and less effective because I don't know too often as an excuse or a reason, you know.
Said like a typical addict, perfect addict.
Yep. You might want to consider drugs.
That's it. You better up the ante.
Augmenting the music.
Wow, let's get back into that.
Let's get back into that.
Marijuana and music.
I would augment the music with, you know, the doobie in the parking lot. Dweezil Zappa. Dweezil Zappa will take your sorrow away.
I personally, you know, went on this spiritual binge and came crashing down to earth the first time I met Jeff.
Ouch.
I was like, I'm an addict through and through and always have been, and the spirituality shit had me lock, stock, and barrel. Still petering out, but it's still... We're all junkies.
You hear so much about, you know, hope and being hopeful, and, you know, raise your vibration to, you know, a higher level and all that, but again, it's all imagination.
You're so screwed when you get that it's imagination and hope doesn't get you anywhere, and none of this is getting you anywhere. Then it's like kind of the interesting stuff starts to...
So much to think of.
Movies
and everything. Books.
Yeah.
I find mostly contemporaries. You know, people that I grew up with from Western PA, they've gotten older much faster than I have. Somehow.
More mature than you are.
I like
that. Must be the air.
Is this the fountain of youth, Jamie? Have we found the fountain of youth?
Jamie's the fountain of youth.
I mean, it's all doom and gloom. It's all nostalgia. And it's like, and, you know, somebody gets sick, and, oh, everybody's going to pray for them, and, you know, and cast light on them and do all kinds of stuff. And it's
keep the myth alive.
Like, holy crap. I mean, I refuse to go there. I mean, I won't say good luck, buddy, but I'll
think it.
No, I'll say something, but I'm not going to say something there.
I bite my tongue a lot because I can be very flippant, and actually, it would come across seriously unkind.
I found a way that I feel like I can still be acceptably, you know, taken, but say something that's a little.
What is the point, Jeff?
Of this, I'm not sure. Yeah, really.
Okay.
Well, I mean, what motivates anyone? I mean, it's clearly, you know, complex and changes from moment to moment. But if you had to boil it down for the sake of a conversation, you know, feel better.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
if you're neutral, then nothing is encroaching upon you. Right? The universe is not taking up, you know, armies against you. Then you might get a little bored or restless. You know, you're looking for a little spice or a little juice or a little spiritual progress of some kind, right? And if things are, you know, really good in whatever way they might be really good, well, then you're suspicious about that. You know it won't last, and you're almost annoyed by the fact that you're feeling good about things because it's unreliable anyway. You know? And then when you're feeling shitty, you're somehow motivated to either get back to neutral, where you're bored, or feeling good, where you just suffer from mistrust. Where are you going? Because no matter how you're feeling, you're not happy about it. If you're feeling bad and the universe is encroaching upon you, then you're like, oh, my obsessive thinking, and I can't stand the anxiety and projecting, and I don't want to be at odds, and I just want to be left alone, come back to some sanguine condition. Then you end up at a sanguine condition. You're like, this is kind of boring. My life amounts to nothing. What should I do? I've lost touch with people. They've lost touch with me. I'm less and less and less relevant. And then, you know, something really cool happens and you're like, oh, this isn't going to last, or it's too good to be true, or, you know, how do I sustain it? Or then, you know, then boom, 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 you just keep flipping between one, you know, so-called condition and another, kind of like begging for a state change. And, of course, state changes occur, not necessarily because someone's heard you're begging, you know, although that's an easy, you know, relationship to get into. Thank you, Lord, for setting me to, you know, a sanguine condition for these next 5 minutes. Now giving me bliss for the next 5 minutes and then kicking my ass for the next 5 minutes. You know, you just keep saying, thank you, Lord. That could work or not. But there's no, you could say there's no satisfaction or reliability or destination in how you're feeling right now. And or what you think you'd like to do about it. Now, seeing that, whatever, however that lands, and it's hard to, you know, you can't insist on it. You just kind of have to feel it out, right? Because you can't know what anyone else's experience is, right? So you have to kind of feel this for yourself, right? You can't impose anything on anyone, really. I mean, you can seduce and manipulate people and hold them hostage and blackmail them and all kinds of shit like that, but you can't really get into their experience, right? You can taunt them, but you can't really, right? And what? I don't know. It amounts to nothing. This moment pretty much amounts to nothing at all.
Mm-hmm. That was the only solace I think I got this week where I was like, stop thinking that it's a pattern. It's just this moment that's going to go away and there's going to be a new moment.
Right. Here's the dilemma. This is the dilemma, you know, across the board for human consciousness at large. It's a bold statement, but what the who cares? You know, sue me. What is it that suffers? What is it that might discover some kind of, you know, joy? What may be cruising in a sanguine, you know, nonplussed manner? What is it? Well, before we say it's me, I mean mine, or it's you, you could say it's the nature of experiencing, right? Experiencing being generic, non-specific, but still profoundly the case, travels through these various fluctuations in the field. And different personalities, depending on education and nature and nurture and environment and socioeconomic class and culture and education and, you know, capacity, experience, whatever this is, each to each in his or her own unique fashion. This kind of conversation is available, but not. No one is refused from participating in this or, you know, tipping a toe in the water, but it turns out to be of relatively little interest. And that's, you could just say that's the case of all Gnostic traditions, regardless of the culture, or the gender, or the religion, or whether it's a high altitude or low altitude, Native American or some other, you know, fanciful thing, the Gnostic side of the nature of present experience tends to elude and evade most human beings. They don't take up the call. They don't find the quality of being inspired to self-educate when it comes to, right, the nature of consciousness, the nature of being. And even in, you know, Buddhism, which is contemplatively speaking, perhaps more widely adopted in the West than Hinduism is, there are yoga classes, but there's not much, you know, Hinduism. You get a little namaste at the end of the yoga class, you know, a little yoga nidra and a little namaste, and we'll see you next week and keep up the good work. You know, your plow pose is looking really hot. But Buddhism dedicates itself rather profusely, more so than, you know, yogic Hinduism, to enlightenment through contemplation. Yeah. I mean, who else, what other religion commits itself so, right, expressly, so specifically to enlightenment through contemplation?
As Hinduism.
Some of the mystical arms of other religions do, like...
Yeah.
Like some mystical Christianity and some you know,
yeah, you can, and you won't, you won't find it at the corner chapel, though, will you?
Not that, right? Not for,
right? I mean, if you go, whether to the Catholic Church or any number of Protestant styles, et cetera, you're not going to easily stumble into anyone that's resident within the community, even within the monarchy of the clergy, that are teachers of the Gnostic way.
I'm not sure what it's called.
Siddha
yoga. That's what Siddha.
That's where your gal came from. Yeah, Nityananda, Muktananda, Chidvalasananda.
Yeah. I went to see her again. Okay. She's having.
So. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
but
so yes, you very, could say that
a lot of chanting and
that organization is a, you know, a Vedic, Kashmiri, Shaivistically inspired organization that turned into, you know, a profound ritualistic fetish under the influence of Muktananda and Chidvalasananda, you know, and now has dissipated quite a lot. Yeah. The ashram in the Catskills had absorbed three former Borscht Belt hotels.
Wow.
Three of them. And so its campus, to get on around its campus, you had to take a yellow bus, you know, a school bus that were running all day long to take you from the dining area to the residential area to this area to that area, you know. And everyone was up at, 5:30 in the morning or whatever it was to chant the Guru Gita, which takes 45 minutes to an hour to chant the Guru Gita. And then there was all this seva going on. I mean, it was total mayhem. It was a complete, you know, blast. But, you know, and then Guru Mai would come out at night, and the hall would be past security all around, you know, and there'd be chanting and going up for Shaktipat, which was a tradition that more or less Muktananda had, you could say, revitalized in the West. Because he was bopping people with stuff, and people would go into petite or grand mal seizures and have exquisite, you know, spiritual things, and it would change them for their entire lives. And most of them were just narcissistic, you know, attention seekers, you know, charismatic, narcissistic attention seekers like any of us. You know, some of them pulled it off. Not many of them did. But now if you look to the institution today, this many years later, where'd the money go? You know, I mean, it's Pune, wherever the hell it is. And that same ashram, that big complex of ashrams in South Fallsburg, it's all covered with weeds. It's kind of like our own lives, isn't
it?
Yeah. We become covered with weeds.
Yeah.
All of this enthralling fanfare and exquisite spiritual experiences and butterflies coming and landing on Guru Mai's shoulders and miracles all over the place and people like John Denver flying in for a hug and flying out and, you know, stuff. Now it's just covered with weeds. Which is probably a good thing.
Well, it's good for the bees.
Definitely good for the bees. And so are we covered with weeds. When we look at a consciousness that is on the receiving end of a bad hair day, a neutral hair day, or a good hair day, and all the complaint that accompanies no matter what state we're in, it's like covered in weeds. Now, you're going to have to go, one has to go, through, or likely to go through, could we say, a lofty catharsis, a foundational catharsis in the nature of consciousness itself, to just see if there's something worth discovering that doesn't end up being covered in weeds. And that's a different, it's a different glimpse, right? It's a different adventure than the adventure of amelioration, the adventure of justification. The adventure of trying to wiggle out of suffering as a component, right? As a rogue electrical component. You've jumped off the circuit board. Now you're running around trying to be free from suffering. You know, and someone's trying to, like, put you back in your slot and solder you down. You know, like, get back. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a, now it becomes a different, there's a different texture in the nature of your investigation, which is your imagination, which is the beauty of you, which is the elegance of you, which is the shamanic mad person that you are. Because now your attention, your availability is shifting into a different conversation. To feel this differently. Same reality, were there one, but graduating, let's say, from the restlessness of suffering, including the restlessness of the end of suffering, because the end of suffering is just has just as much baggage as suffering does. Everyone's committed to the end of suffering, but gads, look at how thick and heavy and how much baggage it has, right? And so the end of suffering just turns out to be the flip side of the coin of suffering. It's not really the end of suffering. It's just more baggage. Listening to Joseph Goldstein and Sam Harris have a conversation about Vipassana and Dzogchen, you know, you'd think it would be end up being somewhat lofty, but it never gets lofty. All it turns out is schism, and which is just more baggage.
What is that about?
That conversation, it's a two-hour-long interview, but they're two old friends. Sam Harris is, you know, I don't know, the king of the atheistic hill, right?
But he uses the term spirituality, right? Isn't he the one?
He's oh, yeah, he wants you to believe that he's enlightened, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Joseph is, you know, one of the kings of the Western Buddhistic, you know, Vipassana hill, you know? Top dog, one of the top dogs of the Western Buddhist Vipassana hill. And so both of them can yabber about, you could say, the mechanics of insight, like nobody's business. You know, they're both PhD-level, right, accomplished explorers. And so they have a vocabulary and a humor and a quality of investigating the curious nature of contemplative revelation in a vocabulary that most people would go, the what, what, what? And still, as lofty as it may seem, from, you could say, my point of view, which is my own crazy bias, is like, so? You know, you really want this to land in such a way that it disturbs you completely into a new electron orbit, not just become a fetishized approach to so-called practice. Even Dzogchen Chen, which is alarming, right? That's the fun of it. And Zen is alarming. You know, Vipassana, not so much. But Dzogchen Chen prides itself on being alarming. Present wakefulness. Zen is the same way, right? The Zen slap, the Zen boom is like in the middle of your koan, which you've been working on for the last 30 years. You're like, fuck me, now I get it. Master, master. And then they send you back to the cushion anyway. You know, you can't get ahead. You can't get any respect. But even with, you could say, the proclivity of Kashmiri Shaivism or Dzogchen to be alarming, which means you wake up presently, you can turn it into a fetish, right? You can turn it into a dialogue process. Well, this says that, and that says this, and this says that, and that says this. Well, I had an experience when I was in Dabba-Dabba. And where are you? Well, you're back, you know, on the circuit board. Think you're running around. Whoa, hey, you won't catch me. You know, I'm jumping off this circuit board. Yeah. Good luck. So it's always, thankfully, stranger and more upsetting than we let on. And I say upsetting in context to how what we think this is. It's upsetting to that. Of its own accord, you know, you can't say what it is, no matter how articulate one may be about the nature of I don't know, the raw startle of experiencing itself. You can't really say what it is. But we don't rest, do we? Typically, in the arguably glorious quality of not knowing what this is. Because it's so restless. Not that necessarily that you're restless. You're not doing anything right or wrong. But it's restless. Effusive, right? Mind and story and memory and recall and feeling, being at risk, being at odds, change in the air, right? Cosmic waves coming through and you're just, whoa, this isn't what I bargained for, right? And then we interpret all of this, you know, you could say the beautiful sine wave of the madness of experiencing through the filter of having been someone. That's what's threatening, right? If you feel at odds with the universe, it's because the universe is kind of tangling in a way that we're not that comfortable because it's interfering with the repetition of who I have taken myself to be and what my comfort zones are, what my psychic comfort zones are. Right? So any kind of vulnerability is vulnerability to body, to mind, to self, to memory, to the rhythm of my day, to my financial security, right? I don't want someone's health to go south, especially not my own, because I just don't have any room to care for anybody right now, right? I don't want this to happen. I don't want this to happen. That could happen. That could happen. That could happen. But not that, 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 or that. That's okay. And this is all being fantasized pretty much 24/7, even in sleep, you know, hopefully not in deep sleep, but who the fuck knows, because I don't have any memory of it. Yeah. Shit. So nothing. You think there's a so? There's no so. There's not a destination other than this. There's no truly better way to feel this other than this. The recognition of the profusion of mind, constantly presuming a universe, a world, a field, continuity, memory, self, body, mind, stuff, vulnerability, preference, is too fast and furious to keep up with it. To try to battle it. It'll take your sword away in less than a second and then plunge, you know, into your heart and say, uncle. That's how fast it is, right? It's like those fun martial arts movies, you know, where some novice goes against some guy that's as fast as a cougar, you know, or a panther. Cougars have other implications in today's marketplace. Yeah. They don't say panther. So, you know, before you know it, you know, you're, you know, like samurai, you know, samurai tailor, right? Before you know it, you know, your limbs fall off your body because then you don't, you didn't even lift a finger to defend yourself. That's how fast consciousness is. It's snookering you into thinking that you're a person. It's so fast that your limbs are already on the ground and your head is rolling down the stairs before you could even say, "On guard." It's taking you out. And we're not, we're not clever enough. We cannot outwit just how fast and convincing and superlative consciousness, were there such a thing, at infusing your present experience with ideation and pattern recognition and effusion and universe creation, a sense of self that has a continuity that's now, of course, chronically at risk. So some weeks you're like, not at risk. It's cool. You don't even think about it. And some weeks it's like, fuck, I'm at risk. Right? I am at risk. This sucks. And it's, and then we know why we're at risk, because of this, and this. Something he said, something she did, a memo I got, you know, my health insurance, my automobile, you know. It's like everything is like, ah, ha, 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 you're fucked. And so if we're, you could say, on the receiving end of a lot of noise, and we have the sensation of being at risk, then we are going to ruminate and obsess about, you know, that. And even though we might be clever enough and can, as, you know, fellow adults that are willing to give each other the benefit of the doubt, even though we can say, yeah, I see the mechanism of it, I kind of hear what you're referring to, and yes, my experience looks like that, and but can you stop? No. No matter how clever we might get conversationally through adult agreeability, that's not going to put a dent in this. It's like, oh, yeah, oh, you're on to me? Yeah, fuck you, watch this. Take that. You know? You're like, well, wait, I'm above this now because I... No. Association is just, it's too fast. And you're not the one that's doing the association, really. I mean, you may be the one that's suffering it, right? Because the clenching in your abdomen or your lungs or your sphincters, right? Or the you know, the sense of at-riskness and apprehension that's flooding through your system chemically because your mind is, you know, creating fantasies. You're not responsible. You certainly didn't turn it on. You can't turn it off. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to be free from suffering on account of mindfulness? Come on. I don't think so. Lifting, sipping, tilting. So I'm still suffering. Doesn't fucking matter.
Suffering even more usually because you're like, God damn it, I don't want to be.
Yeah, really. Now I'm hyper alert to everything that I think is going on, and I should suffer less, but I'm still suffering, so it's worse. What? Why don't they just pull the trigger on that shit? If you want to meditate. Sit down, shut the fuck up, enjoy yourself or not. But you know, to imagine that it's going to work, that seems a little childish. It certainly didn't work for the Buddha. It's not like the Buddha got to wherever he may have got under the Bodhi tree, you know, tussling with Mara because of meditation. What? Meditation had nothing to do with it. That's bizarre. And yet, these two, you know, lovely teachers, Sam Harris, you know, Joseph Goldstein, that have dedicated their adult lives to the fine connoisseurship of meditation, might like you to believe that, you know, it's actually worth doing. And that, it doesn't mean that it is or it isn't. It just means that thinking that there's going to be some kind of causal relationship between the curious nature of suffering, the art of meditation, success at meditation, and the end of suffering is a little naive.
Well, they see a physiological effect of it. And a lot of people do. And, you know, that's all fine. But, you know, that's... as a physiological effect, just like sleeping, you know.
Yeah.
Or listening to music. Or,
and it may be absolutely true that if one includes some kind of contemplative practice in their lives, that is it true that their lives will be better somehow? I don't know. I'm not really sure. I don't know. You'd have to be able to live two lives, one where you meditated and one where you didn't. And then you'd have to talk to yourself, you know, at the end of 30 years and go, how are you doing? I'm fucking crazy. How you doing? I'm fucking crazy. Todd, didn't work.
Let's find some identical twins.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we need. We need to find some identical twins and make sure one meditates and the other one drinks. And see how it goes.
On a spaceship pretty soon. Or did I already do that?
So why is it so difficult? That may be a presumption, but I think it bears out. Why is it so difficult to get any purchase on the nature of reality?
Well, because there's just too many attractors.
As in infinite.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. but is it because of the quality or the quantity? Is that really what we could say is, you know?
Well.
The issue.
It seems to be a factor. You know, I mean, certainly when I'm more chilled out and there's not life is not as hectic. I would attest to feeling better.
You would attest, right, to feeling better. Yeah. All right. So how did that come? How did that come about? Right. I'm not holding you to it. We're just playing. We're exploring.
Yeah. I mean, it's my reaction to circumstance.
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? You know, is it? Could you replicate it at will?
On somebody else. Yeah. If I was to control their environment somehow. And stressors like I would throw a mouse that's going through a maze.
Oh, I see.
But for me...
For yourself is what we're talking about. Not that you've become king of the universe. Just for yourself, yeah.
Oh.
But king of the universe is cool.
He can't believe it on others. He's got to, you know, take it to the mouse level.
In other words, however you felt throughout the recollection of your life, which is a myth. I mean, it's clearly a myth. But however you felt through the recollection of your life, could you say anything has responded to your supplication, will, insistence, switch throwing? Do you successfully go into a state change because you wish to go into a state change?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just like, I just do nothing but go with the flow, whatever that is. All that I do.
But you don't willfully go with the flow.
No, I just do it.
Flow is what's going down, and that's the best we can say about it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Say I'm a victim to it, maybe.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, why not?
I have all kinds of thoughts about it.
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to do this. But it turns out that's just some weird part of the flow.
Yes, right. So all of your thoughts about nearly everything that's ever happened, if anything has ever happened, turned out to be trivial.
Yeah, it's just one little part of the whole
thing. Right? Let's take a week where, you know, there was some unsettlement in the vicinity, right, in the atmosphere. And you did a lot of thinking about it. You know, yay, nay, and differently. Maybe trying to, you know, find some relief from the suggestion of anxious outcomes or retributional behaviors because of threat to self, right? Which is pandemic. I mean, come on. So we did a bunch of thinking about it. How did it go? What did all the thinking about it accomplish? Could you say, having thought about it constructively or non-constructively, actually, did it do anything? Did it result in anything? Could you say things got better, worse, or whatever by virtue of all of the thinking that I did about it?
It's more of, you know, how you changed yourself.
You what?
How you changed yourself and your response.
Did you? Were you successful?
Sure, I can justify away anything.
Yeah, not very convincingly, but I hear you.
And then rationalize and, you make up shit.
You make, don't you?
Sure.
I mean, isn't it funny that this is streaming? This is streaming so quickly into the next, right, bizarre moment that we can't really comment upon reality in situ. We can only comment upon an idea of reality prior to, which is the capacity to justify anything.
Rationalize.
Right? Rationalize, justify, look at causal effects. But when you get right down to it, if you inventory, and we can't inventory very accurately anyway, because what can we remember within a 24-hour day? What can we remember within an hour? What can we remember within a minute? Not much, and whatever it is that we do remember is profoundly arbitrary and, you could say, impersonally selective, because we don't really select consciously what it is that we can and or do or choose, were there such a thing, to remember. Right? So the way that any we're piecing together our present experience or past experience or becoming apprehensive about future experience is kind of, you know, random. Mm-hmm. Random triviality. Yeah.
I have noticed, though, that if I meditate,
yes,
that the next day does not seem so bad. Mm-hmm. And that's happened a lot. You know, if I feel like I'm really like...
Do you sleep better at night?
No, it's not even the sleeping. It's almost like the problem or the whatever it was that was kicking my butt just kind of, you know, like a wave, it just kind of disappears.
And so this this encourages you to meditate how often then?
Yeah.
Ah. Well, isn't that curious? You're expressing, and I trust you, a causal confidence.
Yeah. Just a noticing.
Causal observation.
Yes. Yeah.
Of event A and event B.
Yeah.
Event A being meditating. And event B being the noticeable chill.
Yeah.
And even that observation, which appears to be causal, and it may or may not be, I'm not going
to,
is insufficient to incentivize you to meditate more.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
You're just not addictive enough.
Yeah.
You need more addictive personnel. Then you'd meditate till the cows come home and take it all the way to the limit and then realize, oh, shit, this doesn't work anymore. Now I'm screwed. Yep.
Yeah, really, where are those damn cows? I've been sitting on this cushion for 20 years.
Yeah. But don't you think it's the idea of occasionally breaking those bonds? It's like you got these mental attractors. They're evil things.
Well put. Mental attractors are evil things. No argument there.
And you somehow go off and you meditate and you just keep them at bay, you know? I mean, don't you think that there's some replicative effect of that? When you've done it the day before, it's easier to do that the next day, to disconnect from that.
So is this, you're just speaking about what you've done with your life?
I have encountered that, you know.
You've encountered it.
Yeah, where I've been chill just because of a frame of mind. I can't attribute it to meditation in particular, but just...
How frequently do you go to the call it the causal solution of meditation so that you can, let's say, cultivate more chill?
Rarely.
I'm telling you, you got to take it to the limit and then you find out what it really does.
Well, I mean, that's strange, right?
You found all the dots and get away from the little ghosts.
You found something.
Stop, don't eat you. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Well, and every time that I do meditate, I go, why don't I do this now?
That's right.
Well, the ego has no interest in it, right?
It feels good to let go. It feels good to stop the hamster wheel. And I think more than erase the situation, it just, you approach, maybe it's the way you approach your day, the next day. It's more of how you go into it.
Yes. Sure. Yeah.
Just downers, a lot easier.
Two things come to mind. we found something that appears to have a reliable causative relationship between meditation and easation on suffering, right? Some cessation, yeah, some utility, some cessation, some mitigation of suffering by virtue of meditation, but that doesn't mean we do it. We don't actually apply the tool having discovered it. And
there's nothing in it for itself, for the ego.
Well, I don't know why.
It sounds like there is. Yeah. It sounds like you have a better day the next day. There's something.
And here we are. Here's this moment is the culmination of your entire life, right? It has to be. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is not necessarily an... No, now this one. You're right. That one. Well, that one just gets added on to...
We have a do-over.
Yeah. You have... Yeah, well, do-over is now this moment. It's true. You pretty much have nothing but do-over. Yeah. And so, for whatever that suggests, this moment or this meeting or that you're here now is indeed the culmination of the entirety of your life. Because this is where it brought you. Right. And so you can reflect for fun and profit, of course. Where has your life gotten you? Pretty much just right here so far. And nothing you've thought, no decision you've made, no amount of suffering or chill that has floated into your experience has amounted to anything but right now. That's just a simple secular geometry. I mean, it's nothing spiritual. Fuck that. Just, well, I'm alive now. I'm here now. This is now. And so, arguably, whatever has come prior to this contributed somehow, if we want to say that, to the fact that I'm here now. And no matter what I've thought or done or decided or committed to or taken a vow about, no matter how many times I've meditated or not meditated, been a good or bad boy or girl,
warned about coming here.
Or been warned. Yeah, really amounts to, what does it amount to? Nothing, really. I mean, it's curious to see that whatever has happened prior to this moment amounts to nothing, or it amounts to everything, which just happens to be that I'm here right now. This is where I'm living. This is it. This is it. This is it. This is it. So, in light of that observation, not that it has to be a big one or anything, we can kind of get a glimpse that what we're manufacturing as imagination is what we're manufacturing as imagination. You'd think that everything that we imagined prior to this moment should have resulted in something. But, well, it didn't. What? What do I have to show for all of my suffering? What do I have to show for all of my imagination? What do I have to show for all of my vows, all of the spiritual experiences that I've had on and off the cushion? What do I have to show? I mean, you know, if you're a skilled actor and been successful, you might have some Oscars on the, you know, fireplace mantle, but
well, you know, that's one of these things. I mean, you can't really say what do you have to show until you're tested, you know, and then somebody
tested.
Like,
yeah,
throws a ball at you and you're able to catch it because you played ball before. So, you know what I mean? It's like somebody throws a quandary in your face and you've dealt with something similar to that.
Well, okay, so let's say, I mean, that's somewhat hypothetical, but that's cool. Let's say something tests you, as it tends to, right? It tests your mettle, your maturity, your skill, your resiliency, your elasticity, your eating habits, you know, how paleo you've been this week, or lack thereof. So life, you could say, is, you know, part of the myth or the fantasy, the miracle, the joy, the terror of life is that, what, your behavior is always being tested because stresses are coming at you all the time, and then you can see how you respond to, right, an endless stream of stressors. Okay, so let's say that's
Christianity.
I don't. So let's say that's the case, and still, this is right. There's no hypothetical here, is there? There isn't. There's only, if there's a hypothetical, it's one that you conjure, right? That you imagine through magic. Through magic, you conjure a hypothetical or a story or an abstraction or a scenario, right? You're kind of playing war room with yourself because you're imagining scenarios that likely have nothing at all to do with what's actually present, because the scenarios are appearing in imagination, right? So you're playing war games with yourself, or chess game, depending on how, you know, globally you think, right? So you're, one is in a constant, you could imagine, imaginary flux of possible outcomes, which is futuring, selfing, futuring, thinking, imagining, conjuring strategies that you might deploy if X, Y, Z happens. Emotional, right? Relationship, financial, health, right? You've got a bunch of strategies. You might even have actual insurance to assist you were some kind of affliction to occur, like your house burning down or, you know, getting into a hopefully minor car accident, right? Yeah, that's cool. But none of that is, permit me to project, none of that is actually satisfying. Living through the haze of imagination and hypotheticalism is not all that satisfying.
You know what's interesting, though? So this is just an observation. That maybe satisfying is not the right word. When you really want to do something, like you're really planning something, it has a little bit of an obsessive kind of a guy. I can get into that, you know, planning something.
Yes.
And I will be on it like flies on shit.
Flies on shit.
Bees on whatever.
No, flies on shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go with flies on shit for now, yeah.
Okay.
Bees on honey.
But, you know, I can really want to do that. I'm compelled to do it. But am I satisfied? That's, you know, that's one of those.
So you're not satisfied.
So I wouldn't call it satisfaction. I call it sort of a gestalt, you know, it's like I'm thinking of, it's all blended and I'm trying to close the ends, you know.
I know.
So I'm trying to make it complete.
Yes.
So I can be done with it and move on. But I'm never done with it because there's probably a loose end somewhere and I gotta find that.
Right.
You know.
Well, so here's your life. How many open ends do you have right now?
Oh, you know.
A million or none?
Oh, lots.
Lots. All right, you'll go with lots.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this sense of, you know, me, self, I, me, my life stuff, vulnerability, rattling swords with the universe, coping as skillfully as I can with a near constant onslaught of imagination. Yeah. And to have the enviable confidence that you've got many loose ends.
Well, I just know that when I venture into that field, I'm going to find them. So
yeah.
I guess it's a presumption.
Well, I mean, it's you know, you're the captain of your own fate. Not that that's really true, but we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. And so you're allowed to qualify your life experience any way you care to, right?
Yeah, it's all bullshit.
Fair enough. You said it. You said it. I may have planted the seed, but you closed the deal on that one. Yeah, you are all bullshit is exactly what I was trying to say, but it would have been too harsh if I just threw it at you. I wanted you to come to it of your own, you know, free will and accord.
But yeah, but when you're done being in that state, though, I know what you're talking about too. It's where everything is, you know, you just have this focus on something, and you know, you don't know the time is passing. And,
yeah.
But when you look back on it, isn't it like, oh wow, I kind of really lost myself in that.
Even while it's happening, I'm like, there he goes again.
Right.
You know, I mean, yeah, the whole way through. I mean, I'm aware of it, and I do it anyway. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
It's like the id thing. I mean, I go back to Freud, you know. That's like the id is going on. Although the id's got into weird and other things. It's not like
TMI. Must we listen to all your obsessions? I mean, really. Really. Let me get my e-meter out. Let's free you from your obsessions by virtue of recording your auditing session. You can't do much about this. Maybe it's even somewhat of a relief to say you can't do anything about it. I mean, that could be a new, right, dimension. You can't do anything about this.
Well, it may be a little, useful, but it's kind of... Can't do anything about it, and I would just throw in there that maybe you discover that you maybe possibly wouldn't want to do anything about it in the way that you normally would think you would.
Yeah.
Then
sure.
It's not like a torture, like, I can't do anything about this, and I want to.
Right.
Which sucks.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's different.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Then you're still just a tortured.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Little being drug along for the ride.
Uh-huh. Sure. You see, if there is something that's being pointed to by enviable stream entrants that have come before, depending on the metaphor you want to use to celebrate the lives of humans that have been released from suffering, whatever that suggests, you could argue in each and every case that release was just this. Somehow, and it's probably not a how, the effusive nature of profusion and identification and pattern recognition and storyboarding loses interest in itself.
It's kind of sick and tired of
it. It can look like that. Yeah, it can.
It's pretty boring.
It's just not enjoyable.
Well, eventually you're just sitting there like, this is cool.
Like, here we go again. Same old shit. Why am I doing this?
Well, see, it's stranger than that. Because we see what we call mind by reflex will always come back to some kind of arbitration or some kind of causality or some kind of story, some kind of explanation, right? Because what mind can't do anything but report. It can't do anything but tell stories. And the stories that it tells are, you could say, within the context of the conditioning of what we call thought and language. Right? Yeah. So here's this, whatever this is or isn't. I don't know what it is. And I'm like, I've got my antenna out, right? Like, please tell me something true. My antenna's up. I'm listening. I don't hear a fucking thing.
We were all listening too.
You see? I mean, really. Let's say you just sit, you know, my favorite Martian, right?
Yes.
Right? So your antenna come up. And you're like listening for this really tell you something true. Not arbitration, not hypotheticalism, not hijaculation, not anecdotal. That's a new, you haven't been around. Not anecdotal hysteria, not justification, right? No loyalty to memory. You put your antenna up and you're like, go ahead. I fucking dare you. Tell me something true. You're going to get zero.
Yeah.
Absolute zero.
What does that mean?
Now, this doesn't negate the curious vitality of you being a sentient miracle. But just to get it, I mean, even 1 or 2 seconds is good. You know, we're not looking for, you know, sitting on a cushion for 10 years before you say, I'm thirsty, right? Just 1 or 2 seconds of like, I'm listening. Not a word.
But there's something else.
Well, careful. This is the miracle of, you know, you, for fun, let's say you're an incarcerated, corporeal, sentient product of the Big Bang. It's not true, but okay, go for it. You put your antenna up and you're like, go ahead, tell me something true. And you have the immaculate silence of the entire cosmos at your disposal.
And you have room for words?
Huh?
Yeah.
Say again. Wise guy, what?
And you're looking for words.
Looking for words.
Yeah, that's how stupid.
Well, that's what...
Or like at least a sentence, maybe, you know, something ridiculous.
You only get quite total silence, but you get is like louder, like deafeningly loud. I'm here in the total silence.
It's too strange, right? I mean, if there's a goal or some motive or reason to show up and have this conversation, if there's one, and I don't promise any, it would be silly.
You thought it was.
But if you have 1 or 2 seconds, 3 seconds, God knows five seconds, 1, 2, 3, 4. Boy, that was easy. Where your antenna's out, but not a word is spoken. That's real. That's absolutely real. It's not imagined. Imagination has nothing to do with it. I'm listening. What do you got? Oh, nothing? Cool. Even 5 seconds of that contrasted with you can get to sense the difference. In the hamana hamana hamana, one is looking for, you know, vectoring of relief, of justification, of feeling better, of clarifying, of open ends, closed ends, finding more obsessive things to play with, and you're not alone in that. And then, you know, creating, you know, orchestrating your life. You've got the baton and, you know, the trumpets and the horns and the tympanums and the, you know, first violin and the violas and, right, the guy at the piano, right? And you're like, and there's this big, loud fucking thing going on, and you're hoping it sounds a little bit like Bach. It may not. Or it might. But
and then all the ejaculation comes in and ruins everything.
It all ruins everything, yeah.
Like, you just...
Someone's cell phone goes off in the concert hall.
Yeah, it's not good.
So you can see...
Someone better review this book for the children.
Yeah. So through the orchestration of mind, you won't notice any relief from mind. Because tangling with the universe on a good day, neutral day, or a bad day is the engagement of mind, the engagement of story, the engagement of the pressure of being someone, and that this is something, and that the consequences that may or may not occur here mean something to the likes of me. And that's what we can't escape from. The cacophony, the orchestration of mind will never give any relief of itself. Why should it? It's mind. Why, you know, you don't ask your puppy to, maybe you do, you know, go out and get a job.
I ask mine all the time, and he's like...
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good feedback.
Fuck you.
So,
well, it's the same thing that the universe does.
It's the same. It's the same thing with mind.
I don't understand you, and
we turn reflexively, habitually to mind as the arbiter or deliverer of perhaps some kind of relief, some kind of objective place or stance for being to get a fucking break. But it can't. It can't deliver what we're asking of it, because it's fucking mind. It does not deliver release from itself. It can only self-replicate.
That's why psychoanalysis doesn't, it just turns in on itself. You know, it seems it's just continuing down that rabbit hole.
Yes.
No real resolution.
I don't know enough people that have done enough psychoanalysis to say whether... You know, their lives benefited from it or it turned out neutral. I mean, I don't know. But yes, I mean, generally speaking, you could say some forms of therapy are profound interventions, which help me shift the geometry of the way that I think and feel and act and behave so I can become, quote, more functional. That happens.
Well, that can be a good thing.
That's right.
Totally.
And or, you know, a bunch of therapeutic adventurism might turn out to have very little impact on the way that you roll. Hard to say, and it's not that really important, because you could suggest that all of that is still within the field of mind. Yeah.
It makes you wonder, though. You say, you know, you listen for 5 seconds and there's nothing. What is it when we feel that something rings true? There's some kind of, you know, resonating within you where you go, that feels right. Or that feels like
yeah.
truth to me.
Yeah.
And you don't know why it's coming at you as truth.
I would suggest when that feeling occurs,
yeah.
what you've recognized is absolute release from mind. That's what's true. Mm. Silence is true. And silence is, again, a bit of a fetish. You know, it's not quite silence as the presence or absence of anything. Silence is used typically, right, in the field of meditation, you know, as, well, the ultimate thing is the silence. But, you know, all right, thanks a lot. You see, it's stranger, right? The possibility, not just the possibility, but the, let's just call it the deliverable of, you know, 5 seconds of nothing at all. Has a certain signature, a certain quality of intelligence. It's a rings true, but it's a non-referential rings true, which is strange. Mm-hmm. You see, because the typical loyalty we think we have, or that we think we're under the influence of, is loyalty of mind, which is explanation and justification and causality and this because of that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and we go completely bonkerunis. Sounds like a spaghetti dish in a can. But freedom from mind is a palpable it's real. Freedom from mind is real. And curiously at hand. Really, absolutely at hand.
You know, it seems as though there's this silence, there's this depth, what have you, and there's a resonance, or maybe it's a lack of resonance. You know, there's something where all of a sudden, in your environment, whether it's a person or a scene or what have you, that depth can just expand and cover everything.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Of course.
I mean, and it's kind of rare, it seems.
Okay.
Although sometimes, you know, maybe it happens more frequently if you're set up. If you go on a retreat somewhere, it seems like maybe can happen more often while you're on the retreat.
I've talked to a bunch of people that have been on a bunch of retreats, and they have all kinds of things to report.
Also, once you retire.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, once you retire, yeah.
I'll have to look into that.
So. Well, first you have to retire, then you have to close all those open ends. You got to close those and not create any new ones.
As soon as I'm done.
As soon as you're done, I'll get to that, yeah. What do you want us to put on your gravestone? You better think about it now. Right.
Okay.
Finally came to closure.
The last loose end. Yeah,
right. Nailed it all.
Dot, dot, dot. I think.
I think, right.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
Right.
At least I think that's what I think. I think so.
If there's a reason that this appears with the quality of indulgent madness that it appears as, it is simply because the magical nature of fascination and profusion is slippery or remarkably easy to identify with. Joseph Goldstein remarked during this interview about having an enlightenment, you know, insight of some kind, when he was still very young, still very naive, didn't have the letters and experience and practice that he now has. But even without all of that preparation, someone was reading to him a questionable translation of, you know, some Dzogchen text, which simply was pointing out, I don't know, the nature of Dharmakaya, Nirmanakaya, Sambhogakaya, blah, 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 being of the nature of zero, being what we're talking about in terms of, you know, a five-second break from everything. Oh, fuck. So he had this spontaneous, you could say unsought, right, naive encounter with the fact of not self. You could say that influenced or drove the entirety of the rest of his life. Maybe to get back to that so-called state through the vehicle of, you know, contemplative exploration of meditation practice. And even remarked in a very candid way with his dear friend Sam Harris that you could kind of glean from the talk that he never quite ever got back there. Or maybe he's implying that he lives now as an adult man after decades and decades of remarkably intense and fruitful practice. He knows, with an inner recognition or an inner silence, whether characterized through Vipassana vocabulary or through Dzogchen vocabulary, it's not all that really important.
There's something special about the first time.
There's something special about the first time.
Not for me.
There's a testimony. We
can you elaborate on that?
No, this is a tantra workshop.
We're all curious.
We can only imagine.
We just tell you its name, it's good enough.
The same.
Lance Cherry.
Lance Cherry? Is that for real?
Oh, yeah. It's for real.
You have.
Custom crafted disaster just for me. Oh, waiting. Take me up on the corner.
You have.
A nice suburban town.
I gave my virginity to Lance Cherry.
I tried to look him up the other day because we were talking about this with Suzanne, and all I got was a mugshot. One mugshot from when he was younger. I'm like, that's it.
That's him.
I mean, you know, obviously he was meant to be a porn star.
The universe is right? laughing at you.
So you think?
Oh my God.
It just doesn't get any better than Lance Cherry, does it?
Did I miss this particular
crime? I don't know.
No, this is at the Polish church.
Oh.
Stationed by the cross.
Brought that up.
How do you explain that?
You are full of mystery, my dear.
Wow.
That's a classic.
I do my best to conduct a serious spiritual inquiry, and it just goes this way. It's a good thing. It keeps it real.
Oh, it does that.
Yeah. I can imagine someone at the Ajashanti retreat. Master, I remember the first time I had conjugal relations with a young man. His name was Lance Cherry. Anywho, I'd like to ask a spiritual question about it. Oh, my God. Well, these are lovely sidebars because they're so sweetly illustrative of how easy it is to fly into, fly into whatever there is to fly into. That could be hilarity, it could be suffering, it could be release, it could be incarceration, it could be panic, it could be depression, it could be revenge, right? It could be anything. That's how good... Let's say reality, were there such a thing, is at suggestibility, hypnotic imaginary suggestibility.
Going back to the whole rings true thing.
Rings true.
I hate to keep bringing this up, but I
not enough to stop. But no, I'm not asking you to stop. Please. Just don't hate it so much.
Now you've got it ruminating up here.
Yeah, yeah.
There she goes.
Right. There's, right, rings true.
If someone's saying something and you say to yourself, that rings true.
Yeah.
Is it something that's actually, is it this, universal kind of message thing? Or is it all of... the influences of your life that has made you who you are today, or what I'm saying is it rings true to you because you were brought up in the suburbs and
one could commit some portion of one's marvelously successful life to an investigation of rings true. I mean, Joseph Goldstein dedicated his entire life to rings true. Right.
There's a whole lot of Catholics that would claim that's the rings true. They're Catholics because it rings true for them.
There's a whole lot of people that are, faith-based in one form or other.
Yep.
Contemplatively or otherwise, that have been inspired to get some purchase on rings true.
Mm-hmm. Right? Devil worshippers, they got the rings true, man. This is what they do.
Yes, that's right. Everyone
mass murderers, man.
Everyone's included rings in true. Rings true.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had lunch with Hannibal Lecter the other day.
I've thought of that. It's like, I'm just pleased that what rings true for me is this. I feel kind of lucky. I don't feel as much like a sheep anymore.
Good to hear.
It's funny that you say that, not just punch like a sheep. What do you mean? Because I think that rings true.
Are you referring to your first sexual encounter? Or?
Oh my God.
No, but I would, from the way I see it, I've been heavy into sheepdom for quite some time. This particular area of inquiry, so to speak, has nothing to do with sheepdom. There's no real thrust to turn you into a sheep.
So you end up being a little more fearless just because it's not so such a big deal.
Yeah. And there's less self here to say, oh, I do the work, I do this. Like, I've been there. I've been so freaking full of myself in my endeavors. And with this, there's nothing to be full of. Mm-hmm. You know? How does Paul put it? It's just dog shit normal. Or, you know, dog shit. How's dog shit awake? I don't know. I'm not going to get it right, but it's just this. Screw the bells and whistles. They're hope. And it's not real.
Let's say you can occupy, which is saying too much, the present moment, which is again saying too much. And you could say, see through unjaundiced eyes the genesis of imagination. So the genesis of imagination and the content of imagination are present, on tap, on demand. But you can discover, you could say, a quality of, let's call it resting or some kind of activization of presence itself. Which is absolutely unafflicted by the genesis or presence of profusion. Here's the remarkable, magical, and involuntary nature of your sentient, call it that, irrefutability. Oh. And imagination is not functioning. I don't mean it's broken. I don't mean it's been repressed. But interest and attention, right? You could say that, right? The undulating, perhaps throbbing, radiant, present nature of attention itself is free of imagination.
Way more real than anything that imagination offers. It's just real.
Rings true. There's all kinds of metaphors that we could use for the recognition that appears in you that, oh, okay, this is present as presence. Those words get too much play. And I am not hooked, enrolled in imagination. There's no self-accusation. There's no apprehension as an affliction that needs to be resolved. There's no unfinished emotional business. There's no aspiration. There's no reflection on the imagination of past. This is the palpable beatitude of, dare I say, reality, though I have no business saying anything about anything.
there's enough sensitivity, intelligence, to arrive right here and not be befuddled by the reflex of imagination, hypothetical circumstances, anecdotal reflection. You're not tangling. You're not entangled, nor are you tangling with profusion as imagination. Here it is. There's no otherness. There's no supreme being. There might be, but that's her problem, or his problem, or its problem. Yeah. There's no superstition. There's no platform or plateau of belief. I don't have any loose ends, though I may have a million, you know, if I check my email or my to-do list, you know, or check in with psychic restlessness, I can find, right, 1,000 things undone in no time at all. I mean, really no time at all. Spontaneously appearing as entanglement with imagination. So what is mind? Well, one way to look at it, since there really is no mind, but you can play with the word and say, well, what is mind? Well, one aspect of mind is unconscious entanglement with imagination. Samsara. Confusion, delusion. Suffering, insensitivity, daydreaming. It's one way to look at mind, which is attention is lost in profusion. Another way to look at mind is, I don't hear a thing. Same diving board. Here we are. Here's the diving board. Water looks good, you know. Burgers on the grill. Like I say, I have a nice sunny afternoon. Things are going my way. No profusion. No entanglement. Imagination is on tap and at hand, should you need to function somehow. Yeah. Hey, you want mustard on that burger? Yeah, you bet. And break out those sour cream chips, too. And then you go back to bliss. You know, someone asks you a question, tell them how you want your burger. But then it's like, you know, and that appears just miraculously, spontaneously. You do appear, in yourself, to yourself, as yourself, in the imagination of a world, absolutely spontaneously, according to, you know, call it karmic or Vedic or Ayurvedic or Taoist, you know, pattern recognition. And you're basically impersonating yourself nonstop. And you don't even know who you're impersonating because you've always been you. But appearing as persona, right, in life, isn't it clear you're just impersonating someone you thought you knew? Which turns out maybe to be you, but maybe not. And that's how gifted profusion and identification with profusion is. It's suggesting to you that something's actually happening right now. Or that I've got loose ends to tie up. Or the universe is tangling with me and fucking with my head and I'm getting a little irritated by it. Yeah. You don't come, you can't come to the end of suffering by fucking with profusion.
Because it'll just suck you in. You'll just fall right in the pool.
You know how good you are. You know how playful you are, how playful this is. Mm. To become occupied with entanglement and profusion and identification and universe creation, which amounts to a bunch of psychic noise. And then there's identification with the presence of psychic noise as self. So we can see from, you know, the evidence of our own lives, suffering can be pretty gnarly. So if you want out, and I don't even know if that's a good thing, right? It's hard. I mean, you can't really measure that you're thinking about this in a better way than, you know, I'm thinking about it, or she's thinking about it, or your boss is thinking about it, or you can't really, you know, you can't really compare. You can compare in profusion. You can do plenty of comparing and measuring and hierarchicalization in profusion and suffer even more and more and more and more and more and more and more. But in reality, who knows what the fuck that is, when you are completely unentangled, profusion's on tap, but it's not fucking with you. Mm-hmm. There, here, as in here, there is no comparison. There's no measure. I mean, Lord Buddha, not, I mean, some people just refer to him as Jim, you know. Lord Buddha. Yeah. Hey, Jimmy, hey. Rock on, dude.
Thanks for your love.
You know, thumbs up. Thumbs up to Krishna. So, Lord Buddha referred to it as cessation and nibbana, cessation and nirvana. What was he pointing at? What was he letting on about? This. Not the fucking Bodhi tree, even though, you know, he spent a night there, apparently a tumultuous one, but okay. That was his pleasure and privilege. But what he was referring to, what any of them have been referring to, you know, Ramana Maharshi's glassy Brahmanic gaze. You know, Nirsagadatta blowing cigarettes and yelling at everyone. What? This is absolutely unentangled with profusion. No identity is suggested. That's awake. Maybe it's not, but who cares? It doesn't really matter. You know? Once you set a destination, right? Like in fucking light, enlightened fucking mint, or in fucking enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. Then you're fetishizing again, right? You're stuck in profusion. You're aiming in fantasy and in profusion. Yeah. Because you think that you're of the nature of a certain kind of being, of the nature of some kind of suffering or an imposition, and enlightenment will be when your ship comes in. So where are you? Well, you're in ideation again. You're in profusion. People say to Peter Brown, oh, I see what you're talking about, but it's not solid yet. I'm not there yet. I don't dwell all the time in it. Something's got to tell me what to do next. And Peter's a very generous guy, and so he'll tell them what to do next. Right? Which is pretty much, in a kind way, he'll say, well, just shut the fuck up and relax. But, you know, he doesn't want to say that because he's nicer than I am, more skilled at this than I am, of course. And so he'll say something that might be useful to them to think about next. But what he really means is, you got to be fucking kidding me, you know? Shut the fuck up. What do you mean? You're what? Well, you think I've been it's not like I've been saying anything every time I've come to L.A. or Seattle or California. I mean, I haven't been saying anything. I haven't really been saying anything, goddammit. Just hang the fuck up, hang the fuck out, and shut the fuck up. Because this is, you know, a bliss field that has no measure. So what's the strategy? What's the strategy? But a lot of people have. But a lot of people have. I mean, if you go to Adyashanti, you start getting Adyashanti eyes. If you go to Byron Katie, you get Byron Katie eyes. If you have a chance to sit with Ramana Maharshi, and it's too late now, you get Ramana Maharshi eyes. You can't help it because the field is so profound, right? I mean, the presence of, you know, teachers of that, you could say, level of accomplishment is a profound field. It's a palpable field. It's engaging. If you're sensitive to it, you know, and there's a resonance, you're just like, whoa, you know, what the fuck was that? You think you came for a conversation. You can't even find your way to the men's room. You didn't know what you signed up for. You know, that happens. It's fun. It's funny to watch, too. Even when it happens to you, it's like, whoa, what was that?
So you could say that the somatic symptoms of a transmutation in the nature of consciousness, you know, they can be formidable. They can be formidable. But that's not important, really. Because in each and every moment, were there each and every moment, it is possible that you're unentangled, that you are not the product of profusion.
Good to know.
So that's, you could say that's maybe a long-winded approach to respond to Rings True. Mm. Right? Yeah. Rings True is simply the recognition of a remarkable non-material intelligence which has come into absolute resplendent recognition of itself, completely unentangled from profusion. But so much so that it doesn't even mind that profusion might still rear its, you know, three hydra heads and create whatever mayhem profusion appears to create. Right? Because the identity is no longer as the consequence of profusion. The identity, and that's, you know, that word you have to use a little carefully, is what? Me worry? Mm-hmm. You know, Alfred E. Newman-ism. But even what me worry can be turned into my experience as a person that's now worry-free. But no, you see, it's not that, right? Rings True is, it's not becoming a sanguine person, is it? It's not. No, there's no person within 10 miles of here. So your lens, if you will, your encounter with experiencing is no longer through the filter of a person that's either, you know, made the grade or not made the grade. That's why there's a suggestion of transhuman revelation, because it's not operating through the filter of your likes or dislikes. And here it is. I mean, here it is. There's no delay, right? Is there a delay? What? There's no delay. There's no delay. There's nothing that you need to figure out or get good at. For the very solid presence or invitation of reality itself to be so. Oh. Wow. Nice. Wow. Huh. Fucking sweet. Unentangled. This intelligence comes into your palpable experience, and it has a certain kind of signature. Rings True has a signature. That's how come there's recognition, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, recognition is strange, because what is it that's recognizing? Right. It's not the person. It's not your history, mm-hmm. right? The cessation of you has the capacity of recognition of the cessation of you. Mm-hmm. And that's too awkward, too, because it's stranger than that. Yeah. But there is something that could be referred to as recognition, which is, this, huh, unentangled. Whoa, fuck me, I thought I was suffering. Maybe not. No big deal. I mean, I didn't see any lightning happen in the room. You know, maybe I, what? It's just, you know, yeah, this could be loaded with angels, but they kind of snuck in. Through, call it repetition, right? Call it a certain kind of celebration, a certain kind of contemplation. This is a voluntary, arguably voluntary, come and go as you please, quality of contemplative, shamanic contemplation, right? Revelatory, playful, shamanic contemplation. And then you, if we're good at it, that means all of us, if we're good at it,
you might have a few moments of rings true, which is the cessation of self. It's the palpable cessation of entanglement in the beatitude and intelligence of your present experience. Oh. And then you figure out whether that has any value to you or not, and or whether that's something you'd like to do again, play with again, right? Lend the vitality of your own beautiful life in the company of so-called others, not that there are any, to rings true. Why the fuck sit on a cushion for decades and decades when rings true happens to be like rings true? Why commit yourself to decades of investigation when this doesn't need any investigation? I mean, that could be a little rude to say to tell someone who's spent their entire life practicing Vipassana. Why did you... Rings true is... This is good. What? That's why, you know, as much fun and as sincere as Sam Harris and Joseph Goldstein's, you know, affection was in this two-hour-long recording, I was waiting for the rings true.
Yeah,
I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it. Like, you guys still got me. I love you both enough that I'm going to sit here for two fucking hours while I play Freecell, you know, or look at Facebook while I'm listening to your conversation. And I was waiting for the rings true, and maybe I missed it. Maybe I missed it. Or maybe I was in a mood or something, but I was like, huh? Where'd that go? So you can get remarkably rarefied. Yes, I mean, the contemplative adventure can deliver lofty zones of rarefied air. But, we're just interested in chill the fuck out what rings true. How about this right here? How difficult is it to have a moment of rings true? Well, not that this is a product or a process or a methodology, but, you know, put your antenna up and just say, hey, okay, what's true? You don't have to, you know, it's not like that's a solution or something to repeat, but however that lands in you, you can just, okay, well, tell me what's true. I'm listening. I'm what? Oh, space. Oh, nothing at all. Oh, why didn't you say so in the first place? When we're enrolled and enraptured with profusion, it's really hard to, you know, figure out how to get back out of the rabbit hole because the profusion is so intense and so playful and so, you know, Lance Cherry. It just, right? It just comes at you. I mean,
it's like, it's so easy to turn that into something. You know what I mean? I mean, look at that. That's bizarre.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just interesting. It's like, yeah, it's that reflex to want to turn it, you know, these strange, serendipitous, bizarre events to try to rationalize them and turn them into something when really all it ever is trying to show you how fucking weird this is.
Yes. That was Joseph's revelation, which he expressed absolutely poetically. The collapse of self, the collapse of all was the revelation of wow, this dreams enraptures with an incredible gift, right? It this self enraptures incredibly, which is at least in the parlance of, you know, Buddhist negotiation, samsara. To be enraptured in the profuse nature, self-enraptured in profusion, is delusion, is samsara, is unsatisfactory. All the things the Buddha said, anicca, anatta,
no,
dukkha.
It's just a constant, no, this is fucking weirder than that.
through the...
Serious, like, oh, you think that's what this is? No.
As we venture down this path and as we have some recognition of silence which has nothing to do with the presence of sound. It has to do with freedom from and being self-enraptured with profusion. Silence is the release from the imagination of continuity. Here.
Well, there has to be, it seems like, some space from that, you know, maybe like if you're starting with just a basic, like, materialistic worldview, there has to be some kind of room to say, like, maybe that's not true, and then kind of go from the trip out from there can go, like, infinitely, who knows where, but.
Yes.
Yeah. If you know, the habit seems to be to go back to that, like, I'm a person in a world, and then there's an event that's occurring to me, and it seems serendipitous, and I want to try to figure out what it's about. But it's like,
That's certainly one way to characterize being enraptured in profusion.
Yeah.
Yes.